Welcome into Redacted on this Tuesday. Boy, do we have a lot of breaking news to get to today on the show. Israel just bombed Lebanon. Well, now we're heading towards a regional conflict that is having NATO call to get all civilians out of that area and the United States State Department. If you're in that region, get the heck out now because we could be heading for a massive regional war.
Isn't Israel an ally? So maybe we could tell them to not do that?
Oh, right. Well, we send them all the money and weapons, so I don't know. I guess.
Okay. That's not even in plan A, B, or C. All right. We're going to talk about that. Plus, Israeli-backed, what's happening in Israel right now is almost a civil war for their right to abuse Palestinians. So Dan Cohen is going to join us on that. I'm really excited about what he has to say.
Yeah, we're also going to look at Venezuela today because of the election that just happened over the weekend. Not terribly happy for the people of the United States government, the deep state, of course, that wants Venezuela to be overthrown and to have a Western-backed coup in that country. We're going to look at exactly what unfolded in Venezuela and why the CIA definitely wants Nicolas Maduro thrown out of there.
And over the weekend, we saw white ladies advocating for Kamala Harris. Now we see white dudes, mostly white dudes of privilege who want jobs in Hollywood. That seems to be the common denominator. We're going to look at what white dudes have to say in their enthusiasm for Kamala Harris and whether or not it is contagious. Are you enthused if you're a white dude? I work on a set of only white dudes. We have David, yeah. Phillip, and Grimm, and Clayton. So I'm the only white lady, I guess we would call me mixed whatever lady. So let me know how enthusiastic you are based on your race, which... Are we doing that? That seems racist, but it apparently is what we're doing.
And apparently that's what we're doing. We've got a lot to talk about on the show today. Hey, someone, I was just at 7-Eleven, just getting a big gulp, and I just see that Miss, who just wrote in here? Oh, Dean SNJ says, I just wore my redacted hat and I went and got an icy.
Okay. So, love it.
Yeah, if you go to like a 7-Eleven and you walk in, where do you get
my ICs? Big gulp trumps your big gulp. This is just seltzer water, but if we're competing, Clayton's a
7-Eleven,
loser.
7-Eleven is not a sponsor, but given the massive inflation in the United States right now for like getting a cup of coffee anywhere else, it was a dollar. Yeah, a dollar to get a nice iced coffee.
And, I actually quite like 7-Eleven. Having lived in Europe for a long time now, I'm super excited about drip coffee. I don't want any espresso BS, none of that. I just want the drip. I'm excited about that.
Well, all right. We've got a lot. Thank you, guys. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world today. Nice to see all of you guys here. Let us know if you're subscribed to us here on YouTube, on Rumble, on X. We're streaming live on all of those platforms. So, and our only mission here on this show is the truth. We have no agenda, and we are not financed by any sort of big tech companies or anybody. We are supported by you guys and the few sponsors that we have here on the show. So thank you guys for joining us. But we do start with some breaking news today.
Well, World War III is about to get started because of retaliatory attacks in the Middle East. So right now, just a short time ago, Israeli Air Force dropped bombs on southern Beirut, a civilian area, no less, of Lebanon's capital. Now, Israel says that they are targeting a senior Hezbollah commander in Beirut in this suburb in retaliation for an attack on Saturday that killed 12 people. So if we are trying to keep track, it really is a fool's errand because we have a chicken and egg phenomenon going on here, because Hezbollah attacked Israel in retaliation for Israel attacks in Lebanon, which killed 12 people, including children. So now Israel retaliated for the retaliation for the retaliation. Now Hezbollah continues to up this ante in retaliation for Gaza attacks by the Israeli army. Israel's retaliating for, so we cannot go back. We just cannot peel this. We can peel the onion until we get nowhere, right? So right now, this is retaliation for retaliation for retaliation. And as a reminder, Hezbollah only exists to retaliate against Israel for the 1982 attack on Lebanon. So no retaliation, you guys, is ever going to solve this. And any media that leaves that out only wants more war. The only way to stop this is peace talks, which none of these leaders is even discussing. Now the U.S. is saying that it will defend Israel if this escalates.
Of course they will.
It's not an if. The hypothetical is gone. It did escalate. Israel just escalated. So Lloyd Austin today said, well, now if Lebanon comes back and retaliates against this retaliation, which was a retaliation, well, then we'll be there for Israel. He said, if Israel is attacked, we will help Israel to defend itself. We've been clear about that from the very beginning. But again, we don't want to see that happening.
So yeah, that already happened. And the U.S. State Department, of course, issuing alerts. Any Americans, any civilians in that area, get out right now.
Yes.
This is descending into absolute chaos right now. What will Russia do? Russia going to sit idly by and watch right now as Hezbollah then goes into war with Israel and does nothing? Of course, they are not going to sit idly by. And they certainly are not going to sit idly by as Iran gets attacked.
Right.
So they will, of course, talk about Hezbollah, you know, proxy targets and attacking Iranian Hezbollah backed proxy targets, whether it's in Syria, whether it's in Iran or other locations. And Russia will not sit back kindly and watch this happen either.
I mean, you guys, what did these civilians do? And, you know, Israel continues to use the excuse that these leaders are in civilian areas, so it's fair game. But that is against all international law to target civilians, even if there are perpetrators in these areas. So the one thing we care about more than anything else, more than these leaders, more than these groups, more than these names and religions, is the civilians. And so civilians will inevitably die, and they are dying. And no leader is saying this should just stop, full stop.
No, that's exactly what's going to happen. The blood will be shed and this region will descend into chaos. But the United States, of course, is going to stand by and or is going to join the fight. Do you want the United States to join the fight? Do you want United States men and women to be involved in this massive regional war? I ask you, what does it benefit the United States to get involved in a war in the Middle East? The answer is, well, I don't want to lead the witness. You guys tell me, does it benefit the United States in any way to go to war in the Middle East? Absolutely. Well, again, I'm not going to lead the witness. You guys tell me about this.
Well, this one comment from Pirate X says, leave Israel alone. But the bombing, but the civilians, this is the story. This is what will pull us all in. And again, I'm not going to peel the onion and say who struck first, because that's going to take us all the way back to 1982 and further. So what is to be done now is to not solve retaliation for retaliation. Is somebody say, we're going to turn the other cheek, we're not going to solve this with bombs.
Or a false flag. A retaliation for a false flag is essentially what this is. And an Iron Dome is what really ended up killing those 12 individuals in the Golan Heights. So who's retaliating for what? Their own Iron Dome killing their own citizens? I mean, okay, or that's what we're going to start using? I mean, we know that Israel loves false flags, so to use that as a convenience to be able to launch a full-scale attack against Hezbollah like on October 7th, right? Mm-hmm. So that is what we're looking at right now in Lebanon as night falls there and this attack unfolds. What will be the response now from Hezbollah to Tel Aviv inside of Israel for this attack on this southern Beirut in the civilian area in Lebanon? We'll be watching it very, very closely.
And what leaders, name one in the chat, are speaking for peace? What leaders, either elected or candidates, are speaking to de-escalate in this region? What is our hope at this point? Because the Democratic Party that is currently in office is not saying that they will back down or push for peace in any form or fashion. Do we even have a vote in this, or are we, as Western taxpayers, dragged into a war for bloodlust? Just let me know what you think. Well, speaking of bloodlust, we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about the CIA-backed involvement in the Venezuela election that just happened. We're also going to talk about civil war in Israel due to IDF soldiers being actually held accountable for their abuse of Palestinian prisoners. That's not new. We're pretending that it's new, but it's not. So we're going to talk to Dan Cohen about that. Plus, what white dudes think of Kamala Harris. I mean, I want to know what all people think of everything, but why this group and why this party and what is the message? We're going to look at that. But first, we want to tell you about our friends at American Financing, because in today's economy, of course, the stress of providing for a family and yourself can just be overwhelming. And even more so if you're using a credit card to meet your daily expenses. You have to find a way out of that never-ending cycle, you can do what wealthy people do. Look for assets that you may already own and leverage them to make your life easier so that you can build wealth, not live in debt. That's where American Financing comes in. They can help you look for assets such as the equity in your home. If you can use this in order to give yourself some more cash, then this may be a great way to catapult yourself into sinking debt. They are saving their borrowers an average of $854 a month. That's like $10,000 per year more in your monthly expenses. And sometimes they can close in as few as 10 days. So learn this. If it can work for you and your family, try to get a report. See if it works for you. Call 866-890-8434 or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, if you've ever wanted to see what a CIA-backed coup and color revolution looks like in action, we're clearly witnessing it all over again right now in Venezuela, where the democratically elected government of Nicolas Maduro just won re-election. The CIA-backed opposition failed miserably, but that's not stopping the Biden administration and corporate media from doing everything they can right now to discredit that election and push for a civil war, which I don't know that they understand fully what's about to happen and what would happen to the United States if a civil war unfolds. And Elon Musk is even getting in on the action right now, pushing for a civil war. Journalist Anya Parampil from The Gray Zone just posted this on X a short time ago. I'll read it here. Quote, with zero knowledge of Venezuela, ex-influencers and MAGA conservatives are cheering on criminal gangs pushing for civil war in the country. Make no mistake, this is where their regime change fantasy will lead. Do people understand how disastrous this will be for Venezuela, the region, and the United States? Your leaders intentionally flooded your nation with desperate migrants before, and they're preparing to do it again. They want blood in Venezuela. Anya knows more about Venezuela than just about anyone in Western journalism. Her book is called Corporate Coup, the Failed Attempt to Overthrow Venezuelan Democracy, and specifically looked at the Trump administration's attempts at a coup. Now the Biden administration getting in on the action. Anya joins us now from The Gray Zone. Anya, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
My pleasure to be here, Clayton.
So you've been busy over the past 48 hours with all of what's descending into chaos in Venezuela. You know, a lot of people feel like are being played like a fiddle right now if they're watching corporate media. I, too, have seen like a lot of conservatives on social media posting about Venezuela. And they clearly are either being played or they're being willfully ignorant about what's going on here. What is your assessment of it?
I think we have various competing interests here. I think, you know, I've been a fan of Elon Musk and his way of operating X up to this point. I do genuinely feel that it's been a better platform for free speech and that the war in Gaza would not have been the same. We would have not seen it the same way in the West if not for what he allowed on X. That doesn't mean that he himself is perfect. And in this particular instance, he's decided to openly side with Maria Corina Machado, a figure that has received U.S. funding since the early 2000s, since 2002, 2003, when Chavez first took power. She was one of the leading so-called civil society activists receiving State Department funding in order to overthrow Chavismo and the Venezuelan government. She's still around in 2024, but she wasn't on the ballot this time. She was basically the muscle behind the campaign of Edmundo Gonzalez, who was a former functionary in the pre-revolution days of Venezuela. He worked in El Salvador and Venezuela's ministry there when the United States was partnering with Venezuela to run a dirty war in El Salvador and neighboring Nicaragua. So I'm willing to bet he worked closely with Trump Venezuela envoy Elliot Abrams, who was later convicted for his role of criminality in the region over Iran-Contra and is still advising the Biden administration today on Latin America. That's the candidate you have that Elon has thrown his weight behind because for some reason in Latin America, and I'm guessing it has to do with natural resource wealth, he has decided to side with Javier Milei, a figure in Argentina that is very pro-United States, pro-IMF. He's sometimes labeled as a libertarian, but I don't think any libertarian Argentine would be pegging their currency to the U.S. dollar and being so dependent on foreign banksters in order to fund their economy. And that is basically the program that Elon and others would like to see take rolled out in Venezuela under Edmundo Gonzalez. And that was the program in Venezuela before Chavez, all throughout Venezuela's history since the discovery of oil there in the 1920s. And then on the U.S. political side, the MAGA conservatives, that I give them credit being very brave on Ukraine and standing up to U.S. intervention in Europe. Unfortunately, I feel they're beholden to a foreign lobby here in the United States, just as we have the Israel lobby, which is, you know, reigns supreme. We also have a very powerful expat community of Venezuelans and Cubans in Florida, which is a state that any U.S. presidential candidate seeks to win, and they play outsized influence here. They would like to use U.S. taxpayer money, and if it came down to it, U.S. troops and blood to return themselves to power in Venezuela. And unfortunately, too many U.S. political figures, even those that claim to put America first, fall for this line because they hear the word socialism and pretty much fall apart.
That's right. So over the past few days, all we've been hearing from these voices is it's a socialist country. And we, you know, clearly there are problems with this election and America needs to stand for the people of Venezuela. And they do not want to have a socialist government in charge. And we need to stand with the people who are taking to the streets. But it's clearly they're clearly conflating two things here, and it seems like they're fabricating an entire story in order to carry out their narrative, are they not?
There are a couple points to look at here. First of all, I see a lot of people online pointing to a last-minute jump in support for Maduro that came in with the polls and comparing it to what happened in the United States during Stop the Steal, when there was like a 3-day pause in counting, and suddenly, you know, I went to bed on election night in 2020 thinking that Trump had won re-election, and then 3 days later the result changed. That is not what happened in Venezuela. And first of all, because their elections are much easier to audit. You need an electric fingerprint scan and a physical ID in order to activate your ballot in Venezuela. You are then
Imagine that.
I know, right? And they're actually proud of that. When I go to Venezuela, they're proud that they have voter ID laws that they say that makes their country safer, more secure. But for some reason, people here can't get them, according to Democrats. So you have that, and then you get a physical receipt of your ballot, which you carry into an on-site secure box, sign your name again to affirm that you oversaw that ballot drop-off. That physical ballot receipt, 54% of those ballots are automatically audited against the electric result tally in these polling sites after the vote is counted, in order to assuage fears that the digital or electronic vote was tampered with. And so the opposition claims that they won some of these polling sites that the government claimed Maduro won. The National Election Council should be able to put those rumors to bed by releasing the polling data. And we can get that anytime. We should be getting that anytime soon now. But the other point is, a few years ago, you may remember in Bolivia, that same line was rolled out, that there was a last minute jump in support for Evo Morales. And that's why the election that he won in 2019, I believe, was fraudulent. But what we have to keep in mind about countries like Venezuela and Bolivia is that they don't actually operate like the United States. They have extremely rural areas where in some cases the vote count does come in very late. And those happen to typically be bastions of support for the progressive or sovereign government. In this case, Maduro, and in Bolivia's case, Evo Morales. And so at the time in Bolivia, the OAS and outside powers were able to use that last minute spike in voting in order to carry out a coup. And that was later, even the New York Times admitted that, no, that data, that polling data was correct. It just had to do with votes coming in late. That could be the case coming here in Venezuela. But even if we're not going to get into the nitty gritty discussion of vote and who won the election, the reality is that right now there are armed gangs shutting down streets in Venezuela, firing at troops, okay? At least 20 Venezuelan soldiers have been injured in the past 24 hours because armed gangs are roaming the streets attempting to overthrow the government, okay? This is what the U.S., the Democratic Party, freaked out about on January 6th when they had a shaman walking through the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., and acted like that was a violent insurrection to overthrow the U.S. government when the police were there pretty much opening the doors for protesters to go inside. That is not what is happening in Venezuela. Can you imagine if MAGA had armed themselves, had shot U.S. troops, National Guard troops and police, and put up barricades in the street around the White House to violently force the overthrow of the sitting government? That I don't even want to know what would happen in the U.S. if that took place. And so the fact that that's happening in Venezuela right now, and that's what you have people cheering on, is very concerning, because the military has faced many tests of its loyalty to Maduro over the past decade, and they've never switched, even when the U.S. military was on the Colombian border threatening to invade. So I highly doubt the Venezuelan military is going to throw their weight behind these opposition figures now. And so if this violence escalates, what we're looking at is a civil war in our hemisphere. We're complaining about Venezuelan migrants now in the United States. How do we think it's going to look if there is a civil war in that country?
Right. Destabilizing countries is the number one cause. You know, when people want to complain about illegal immigrants in the United States, they never talk about the cause of it. They talk about the symptoms, right? So we go in and destabilize these Latin American countries, and then these flood of immigrants pour into the United States, and we complain about it. If you look where it starts, it's starting right here with this U.S.-backed color revolution happening in Venezuela. I guess I'll get you out of here on this, which is, you kind of touched on the oil point of this earlier, but when people say, well, why would the U.S. government want to do this? Why would they want to overthrow Maduro? They're using the socialist argument, but you mentioned oil at the heart of it. Is that what we're really looking at here, is oil and resources, the overthrowing of this government so that the United States can control its oil resources?
Yeah, that's a very key point here. When we talk about socialism, Venezuela's economy, and this is something I emphasize in the book, is vastly controlled by the private sector. Its government and the public sector are only responsible for controlling about 15-20% of the economy. That's not so different, actually, from statistics here in the United States. The difference is what's privatized, what's socialized in Venezuela are their oil reserves, are there gold deposits, are there vast mineral reserves? And what we're talking about here are oil reserves over double the amount that Saudi Arabia has. Venezuela has by far the largest oil reserves in the world and the largest untapped gold deposits in the world. So let's think about that. The world is changing. Russia, China, the BRICS nations are establishing a world, a financial system that is going to be less dependent on the US dollar. That's already very clear. And I'm willing to bet gold is going to play a role in that future economy. So Venezuela, I believe, will probably be invited to join BRICS this year in Russia. And the United States would much rather that gold and that oil be under the command of not Venezuelan companies doing business with U.S. companies, but U.S. companies, period. And that's the difference here. Venezuela, before the revolution, was a free-for-all for the foreign corporate U.S. and European companies to exploit the oil and all of the reserves. The IMF came there and dictated their domestic policy, didn't allow them to develop a national industry capacity. So they were very heavily dependent on oil or imports for basic goods and exporting their oil. Well, Venezuela's tried to reverse that, tried to develop their own ability to build their own products, not be so dependent on imports, but that takes time. In the meantime, the U.S. is imposed these sanctions and attempted to strangle their economy because they're so dependent on these imports, but it's not working. Russia and these other countries have stepped in to support Venezuela. They were able to survive, even able to possibly, you know, Maduro, according to polls, did even before the vote took place, have a good chance at winning this election. I don't think Americans in Washington, the people running the policy here, can really wrap their heads around the fact that he's managed to survive. And because they thought the Guaido coup or any just little push that they give would result in the collapse of his government. And the fact that it stayed this long tells me that it comes down to the military. And I don't think we want to fight a war against the Venezuelan military, not a dirty war, not a direct war. The Russian military is present in Venezuela. They have advisors. They care about their ally there. They're not going to let it go. So I would hate for World War III to come to the U.S. continent, or to the American continent, rather.
Yeah, and Vladimir Putin of Russia just congratulated Nicolas Maduro on an election victory. So that, I'm sure, sits well with Anthony Blinken and the Biden administration, or whoever's running the Biden administration at this point. Anya Parampil is the author of the book, well, a couple books on Venezuela, Corporate Coup, The Failed Attempt to Overthrow Venezuelan Democracy. Everyone should go check out that book if you want to educate yourself on Venezuela. And to all of those MAGA conservative media types out there who want to educate themselves on Venezuela, maybe you should read the book as well before jumping to conclusions. Anya, great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Clayton.
Thanks so much. It really has been kind of amazing to watch the corporate media and some of the alternative media who are not corporate media sort of jump on this story, and they're getting it completely wrong.
Yes.
But I mean, you know, people make mistakes, but you have to wonder if like it's intentional mistake making to specifically target, you know, to go after the story in this way and to say that, you know, we need to send American military down there. We need to go down there and make sure that they have a fair and democratic election. It's very rich of us to talk about elections right now. I mean, yeah. It's unbelievable.
Sure. It's also worth remembering Nicolas Maduro is still under indictment by the FBI for oil corruption, has been since the Trump administration. That was William Barr who did that.
Of course.
So he's still wanted. So our relationship with that is so strange. Like, we want your oil. We don't like you. It's, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's not logical, is what I would say.
Well, we got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to talk about what's going on in Israel right now, because a number of IDF soldiers have been arrested by the Israeli government for some atrocities inside of the Israeli prison system. We're going to talk about that. But could that be the tinderbox moment that could spark a civil war in Israel? Speak to anyone who's an Israeli expert right now, and they know that that country is being held together by duct tape. I'm talking about the bureaucrats inside the government. Big power struggle right now. That's not getting any Western media attention, of course. They want you to think that Netanyahu's the guy, and you should, you know, not question anything. So we're going to look more deeply at Israel in just a moment. But first, if you suffer from daily pain, I need you to listen to this message very carefully. Fortunately, right now, I'm 47 years old. I don't have this pain, but I have a lot of people who are a little bit older than me that absolutely do. We all know that pain relief is changing forever. As we age, aches and pains are normal, and we all are searching for effective ways to relieve pain without side effects and addiction. Let's be frank, you've all seen the horrors of opioid crisis. You may have even been affected personally by it. And that's why we're sharing a pioneering medical scientist. His name is Clint Winters. Now, if you have seen this world-renowned health expert featured in the national media, he's unveiled a natural pain reliever that has taken the world by storm. Yes, I'm talking about Canolidine. This 100% drug-free way to get full-body pain relief without dangerous pills. That's right. As you read this right now, Canolidine has become the go-to pain reliever for over 1 million Americans, hundreds of professional athletes. In fact, it's so powerful that Dana White, the UFC, those guys are now using it as their official pain reliever at the UFC. Now get this. As Clint explains, Canolidine is the only compound on earth that optimizes your body's natural painkillers called endorphins at any age. When taken daily, your body will fire back to relieving pain like you were in your prime in no time. So hear me when I say that Canolidine is absolutely the future of pain relief. And right now, they're changing lives by providing safe and powerful relief at 1/10 the cost of regular pain pills. Here's the best part. When you click the link below, if you go to trycano.com/redacted, you can access the only Canolidine product in the world for less than $1 per day. So Clint has provided this link for us. Go to trycano.com/redacted. Again, that's trycano.com/redacted. Israel arrested 9 soldiers on charges they raped a Palestinian prisoner so bad the victim could not walk any longer. The soldiers reportedly resisted arrest by barricading themselves inside of the detention center and then defended themselves using pepper spray. That eventually didn't work. They were taken into custody. But that's just the start of this story. And Israeli protesters now taking to the streets in support of the rapists, saying they have a right to rape. Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media has been following this story, and he joins us now. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. I mean, there seems so many unanswered questions about this story. Why now? Like, why now? The rapes have been going on against these prisoners for a long time. Why are we suddenly hearing about these arrests now? What is happening?
Well, it's really ironic how this is all unfolded, Clayton. I mean, the International Criminal Court, the international courts have been pressuring Israel to the best of their ability to carry out some kind of investigation into the numerous reports of heinous crimes, including torture, murder, rape, as you described, of Palestinian prisoners who were taken from the Gaza Strip into the Sde Teiman prison inside Israel, which is an Israeli military prison. And so as the International Criminal Court has has announced some measures, Germany has actually said that, well, we're basically Europe and Germany in particular has said that we're going to wait for Israel. We want Israel to carry out an internal investigation, you know, take care of business inside its own house. So by Germany and Europe doing everything possible to protect Israel, to prolong this process, it actually, finally, Israel opened an investigation into these stories of rape of Palestinian prisoners. And what you just described, where Israeli military police showed up at the prison and in order to investigate the soldiers who are accused of carrying out these awful crimes, then they basically had a clash with the military police and the soldiers at the prison, and then it became a public thing. And you had several dozen protesters, if we can call them that, Israeli protesters, including members of Israel's parliament, the Knesset, from the what's called the Jewish Power Party, going there and denouncing the investigation. So they are in total, full-throated support of these heinous crimes of anally raping Palestinian prisoners. I want to give a little bit of context to help people kind of understand the moment. Back in 2016, there was an Israeli soldier named Elor Azaria who was caught on video in the occupied West Bank city of Hebron, summarily executing a wounded and immobilized Palestinian. This is a pretty normal occurrence, except this was caught on like high definition video and blasted by a local Palestinian and then blasted out by the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem. That video went viral all over the world, became an international incident, and embarrassed Israel. And it forced Netanyahu, who was then the prime minister too, and the kind of political class to say, oh, we don't do that. You know, we believe in the rule of law. And that angered the Israeli populace. And there were huge demonstrations. I was there. I actually filmed them and did a couple of short documentaries on these. And the atmosphere was just, frankly, terrifying. Just fascist mobs in support of this soldier who just blew a guy's brains out on the street. And that is the correct and moral thing they to do, they believe. And so that soldier went to prison for a very brief period of time and was and became a national hero. So and the rage of the populace against Netanyahu was absolutely massive. They filled the largest square in Tel Aviv, in Rabin Square, where Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated in the 90s. This crowd was full. There was a woman, she held up a sign that said, kill them all. So that was back in 2016. Now take that and multiply it by October 7th. The shock and trauma and hate and rage and racism pulsing through the veins of Israeli society that is just at this is the same kind of phenomenon at a just massive, many times larger scale, what's happened in Sde Teiman prison. So these protesters, I mean, I should say this prison, you know, this is the Israeli prison system is run by the police. It's part of the police under the purview of National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. This prison, however, is run by the military. It takes Palestinians from Gaza to the prison, and it says to interrogate them so it can, you know, get intelligence about where Israeli captives in Gaza are, this sort of thing. But what actually happens in this prison, as numerous investigations have shown, Palestinians who have survived this prison have come out of, it's not about getting intelligence at all. It's not about finding Israeli captives in Gaza. What happens there is the most cruel punishment. It is torture with electric shocks, beatings, severe beatings, where if you talk to someone, you are beaten till your teeth break, till your bones break. If you fall asleep, these kinds of things. People are, as we know, anally raped. Prisoners are killed. There have been many who have been murdered who just never come out. I mean, earlier on in the war, when we saw those photos from Gaza of Palestinian men rounded up, their eye blindfolded and their hands tied behind their back, and they're in the back of a truck, that's where they're going. These are just civilians, because all the fighters are underground. So they take civilians from the neighborhoods and just take them there and torture them and kill them. Even top doctors, I think it's 39 medical professionals from Gaza have I believe been killed in there, including the head of orthopedic surgery at Al Shifa Hospital, Dr. Adnan Albersh. He was taken in there and killed. So this is, I mean,
you know the argument. You know the argument. They'll call them all Hamas, right? So civilians, they're just labeled Hamas, even though the Hamas fighters are underground. So they just round them up. So this woman, you know, this is the argument right now from these protesters, right? This is, we should have the right to rape Hamas prisoners, right? I mean, that's really the argument here. Even Ben-Gvir, the Israeli Minister of National Security, condemned the arrest of the soldiers as, quote, shameful, and called them the best heroes. So these soldiers who raped this woman, he considers them the best heroes. I like to think of it in terms of like the United States of America. Like if Americans are watching right now, they're like, can't wrap their brains around this. Imagine this happening in the United States, where we have American soldiers who captured Al-Qaeda terrorists, legitimate Al-Qaeda terrorists, and happened to be a woman Al-Qaeda terrorist. And they were then found to have raped an Al-Qaeda terrorist in a prison holding cell, like at Guantanamo Bay or something like that, to the point where she couldn't walk anymore. How would Americans respond to that? Would Americans take to the streets in protest saying that American soldiers have the right to rape an Al-Qaeda terrorist? Even if that person, I mean, that was a person, an Al-Qaeda terrorist. This person was a civilian. So I guess I'm just trying to put it in terms of like, how would Americans see this? Is that a bridge too far?
No, I think that's fair. And it's even crazier because the Israeli case is even crazier because they say, Ben-Gvir will say, if you criticize this raping and murder of Palestinian prisoners or Hamas or whatever you want to call them, you're an anti-Semite. That's what they'll say, that you're an actual racist and you hate not only Jews in Israel, you hate Jews all over the world. So they're going to say that me, Dan Cohen, you know, you hate Dan Cohen.
You're a Jew.
Or, yeah, exactly.
And you are Jewish.
Exactly. So this is even crazier than it even would be in our case in the United States. But your point stands, because this is not about – look, when you torture someone, you can get them to say anything. You can, you know, they'll confess to anything. That's the whole point of torture. You're not getting actual useful intelligence out of them. You know, you're saying you can get someone to declare that they are baby Jesus reincarnate if you put them under enough pressure. So that is not what this is about. This is about pure sadomasochistic violence against people who they believe are subhuman and deserve to be exterminated, as is happening in the Gaza Strip. Compare this, Clayton, how this episode has unfolded, and we've known since basically not long after the beginning of this war, not long after October 7th, we've heard testimony about the horrors taking place in this prison. Compare the coverage of that throughout all these months to the Hamas mass rape stories that we heard about October 7th, which at this point have long been totally debunked. There's not a single name of an Israeli woman who was allegedly raped on that day. And the media ran with that story. Joe Biden talked about it, said, you know, there was
New York Times.
There were, exactly. New York Times did a huge investigation on it. The UN investigated it. All of this stuff. And it was all totally phony. But here in the United States, a lot of people believe that Hamas committed mass rape. And not only that, in Israel, Israeli liberals that I talked to who are probably, you know, pinching their nose and, you know, turning away as they look at this, they believe that there was mass rape. Now, when you have that in the sort of consciousness of what's happening in these prisons, they're taking that out on these prisoners. You mass raped our women, and now we're going to punish you for it. So that's another part of this. So it shows the media complicity in perpetrating a complete hoax, fraud story while ignoring what was actually a projection. There is mass rape taking place inside these prisons, and it's been completely ignored and covered up by the Western media and political class, and now it's exploded, and everyone, you know, is now wondering what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, it's because they're in the tank and they take money, of course, so they're complicit in this. They're absolutely complicit, and the U.S. media should be ashamed. And by the way, the alternative media in the United States should be ashamed about this. I'll get you out of here on this, Dan, which is civil war. There's been this phrase floated around inside of Israel now for the past couple of days, weeks, in fact, but this could, people saying this could be the moment, you know, the tipping point moment here inside the country for those that want Netanyahu removed and for those that want Netanyahu to remain in power. Do you think that this moment could lead to a civil war inside of Israel over this rape situation?
Well, the Israeli military establishment is terrified of what's going on right now. They have sent actually 3 Israeli military battalions that were supposed to go into Gaza have now been diverted to go to a military court in the Israeli city of Lid in order to prepare for any kind of clashes like this. So this is actually even affecting Israel's war effort, if we can call it that, inside the Gaza Strip, which is, of course, floundering and going nowhere while they massacre civilians on a daily basis. At the same time, if, you know, imagine that there was not just pepper spray used in these clashes between the protesters and the Israeli military police or these detained soldiers. Imagine if there was a shot fired. That is when you could see this whole thing explode, the lid totally come off, and see real serious violence in the street that could descend into civil war. The state of Israel is totally unstable right now. It's in an extremely perilous moment where it has no real successes in Gaza. It's destroyed its international image. It is threatening to go to war with Lebanon, which it definitely cannot handle. It can easily expand into a war with Iran. And it's trying, and Benjamin Netanyahu is just inside the United States, of course, getting bipartisan support, and with the unspoken agenda of trying to drag the United States into war to fight for Israel in Lebanon and in Iran. So all of these factors with the internal instability this is a recipe for complete disaster. So really anything could happen at this point, and there's definitely a possibility of civil war. One more point I'll make: back in if you remember the World Central Kitchen massacre in Gaza back in earlier in the spring. I wrote
when Israel killed all of those aid when Israel killed all those aid workers delivering food.
Exactly. Yeah. Drone strikes on aid workers who the U.S. and Israel had put into Gaza. And this was a huge incident. I wrote a piece on my site, Uncaptured, Looking at that incident and a few others where they had committed a massacre, the Israelis had committed a massacre against a bunch of Palestinians waiting for an aid truck, and then they said they did it. And these were happening mostly in the north of Gaza, these heinous massacres. What that was, as I showed in the piece, is actually it was actually a clash between the soldiers, the rank-and-file soldiers and commanders, and the military establishment in Tel Aviv handing down the orders, because they did not want to see, the soldiers who are in the field do not want to see a drop of humanitarian aid getting into Gaza, whereas the military establishment, the political class, they have to play along with the United States and Europe and the international community and say, oh, we are allowing aid in. And that angered the rank-and-file who were in there fighting so much that that's where they committed these heinous massacres. So this is another big divide. The people in the Israeli military who are actually carrying this out and the political class who are handing down the orders. And it's the same divide that you see in the prisons, in this prison incident, where the soldiers in there are raping and torturing and murdering as broad swaths of Israeli society want them to do, to just simply punish Palestinians. And the political class has to play along and carry out this investigation in order to protect its own interests. So this divide is throughout Israeli society. It's throughout the military. And this is the real fault line, that the longer this war goes on and Netanyahu resists a ceasefire, not because of, for really even national reasons, but because he is facing criminal prosecution if his government falls and he loses his immunity, that he is guaranteed by the most right-wing forces that he brought into the government, then as soon as that happens, it all collapses. So, I mean, this is just barely held together, and it could just explode at any time.
Thanks for your unbelievable reporting on this. One of the few voices, one of the few journalists in the, you know, in the Western world, in the Western media, who's been able to cover this objectively. Dan Cohen from Uncaptured Media will be watching your documentary unfold there in Israel. Dan, great to see you as always.
Great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, Dan speaks the truth and, you know, follows the facts where they lead. And his evidence is in being there on the ground covering the story right there outside of these prisons, and who's been to Gaza. And as a, you know, as I mentioned, Dan is a Jewish journalist, by the way. Mm-hmm. People seem to forget that sometimes. Some people bring it up in the chat here. Don't forget about Abu Ghraib. Yeah. Great point, guys, in the chat. Because as I asked him the question about what would Americans do, like if how would do you think Americans would celebrate the raping of prisoners?
No.
Like, could you imagine like just going down to your little downtown in your like
had to be done
in Omaha, Nebraska,
someone's gotta do it,
you know, or Colorado Springs, and you would just see a massive like rally and be like, hey, what's this rally about? Oh yeah, all these Americans are out here and they're celebrating that American Marines raped a prisoner.
No.
You'd be like, what?
And
what
in fact, am I that's living? Why our military keeps that from us. That's why 2 years ago, Lloyd Austin says, we need to be more transparent with the American people when we find these kind of violations. They haven't, but at least that shows that the ethos of the American public is we want to know it and we want it to not happen.
Well, Abu Ghraib is a perfect example of that, right? In Baghdad, of course, when those photos leaked famously of those 11 soldiers torturing and electrifying and electrocuting and doing all these horrible things to these prisoners there in Abu Ghraib prison. And then, of course, those 11 soldiers were charged with dereliction of duty. They were prosecuted. They had maltreatment, aggravated assault between May 2004, May 2006. And, of course, they were court-martialed. Mm-hmm. They were convicted. And they were sentenced to military prison in the United States. Like, that's what we do with those type of people who are going to, like, rape people and torture people and do all sorts of horrible things in the United States of America. Hopefully you think we don't allow for that.
And we would think we would want our allies to have similar virtues or ethics.
Yeah, we should demand Well, we're going to send them billions of dollars, David, right? We're going to send them billions of dollars. Can we ask them to not do those types of things?
Well, but the problem is you had Netanyahu coming here to Congress and basically saying these people are barbarians. So people see them as less than human. So in a way, they don't care that this is happening to them. Like, there's still people saying they should be because they're Hamas and all this other stuff. because they're painting them as barbarians. So people just have a complete disconnect for that they're human beings.
Well, that's what Dan just said. He considers them, even if they're just civilians, they're not part of Hamas and they're not down in the tunnel structure. Like, they're civilians, but nevertheless, they're going to be lumped together and they're going to be considered less than human, subhuman, as they refer to them. So this is 2024 right now. I mean, this is where we are. You think about like some of the barbaric history of like Genghis Khan and all. Think back. It's like, no, we're living through one of the most barbaric periods in world history right now.
It feels like it.
And it's being live streamed.
Right.
Like, we're literally watching it being live streamed.
And then again, you see how we're being asked to choose sides because we can humanize the Israeli hostages that are still in custody by Hamas. Who are they? What do they like? What did they do for a job? What are their family members? Do we get any profiles like this of the Palestinian prisoners that the IDF has had for decades? Not just the ones that were exchanged or taken before October 7th, but for decades since. Who are they? What do they like? Did they go to pharmacy school? Why don't we humanize both groups? Why don't we have equal empathy for people who are captured?
I always like the random pro-rape people that pop up in the chat, the bots. They're like, redacted's going downhill. See, I guess when we cover the truth, we're going downhill, in your mind. I like to think we're going uphill. And to me, it's like Sisyphus. We're pushing a boulder up a hill to try to get the truth out to you. But hey, if you're pro-rape, keep the troll comments coming. Love to see it.
You can hate me if you want to, but I'm very, very against the idea of if you're trying to take out a single target, you do not bomb the neighborhood you think they're hiding out in. That's just right. call me backwards or whatever you want, but I'm not okay with that.
No, and we're incredibly critical of the United States of America for carrying out war crimes around the world. If you've not logged in and watched our show for any length of time, that's been the bulk of our focus here on the show, is calling out, the same way that Julian Assange did, the war crimes of the imperial regime, the deep state, the military-industrial complex that bombs indiscriminately on behalf of the United States, and you're supposed to rally around it like Toby Keith and say, let's put a boot in your ass. Like, no, 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 wait a minute, let's dig a little deeper here.
Nothing in anyone's asses. We feel that way. Right, that was what that segment was about. We're going to end on that. Nothing up the ass. That's not consensual.
Unless that's what you want. Yeah.
Those are crimes against humanity. Those are against international. Those are international war crimes.
We got to get a T-shirt like that.
Nothing up anybody's asses. Okay.
Speaking of which, we have our redacted store. Check out our redacted store where we don't have a T-shirt like that, but we do have other great stuff over there, so you can check out. All right, we've got a lot more news to get to here on your Tuesday, if you can believe it. We are going to look at Kamala Harris because guess what? There's a lot of white dudes for Kamala Harris that poured over last night on a big Zoom call. You know, the day before it was like white women. Mm-hmm. For Kamala,
yeah,
right. And now last night it was the white dudes. It was all like fat white Hollywood dudes coming together for Kamala Harris. So we'll talk about that. And by the way, her poll numbers right now surging. There's all sorts of predictions. A famous pollster who's accurately predicted every election since 1984 says all of the signs are aligning that Kamala Harris will, in fact, become the next president of the United States. I know it's shocking. How is it possible that all of the media is in the tank, all of big tech is censoring your posts about her, and the polls are now showing Kamala Harris is surging? I know it's shocking in America, and yet we have the audacity to criticize Venezuela and their election over the weekend. We'll get to that in a second. But first, recently, Wall Street firms raised their year-end S&P 500 forecasts after the May 15th CPI data came out. So we could see a similar stock surge. Maybe, maybe not. Whether or not it actually happens, who knows? But having a reliable trading app as your tool is always a choice. And that is why we want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo. They are today's sponsors. Moomoo offers some exciting bonuses for new users. They have a competitive 5.1% APY with a 3-month 3% APY booster for new U.S. accounts. They also can get 15 free stocks by depositing $1,000 and maintaining the balance for 60 days. Australians enjoy something similar as well. You get 6.8% P.A cash interest for 180 days. That's up to $3,353 for a cash balance of $100,000. Now, that's up to 10 free shares with eligible deposits as well. and maintaining that account balance for 30 days. So use my link down below to sign up and see more information about them. Get your new user reward from Moomoo when you start your investment journey with our sponsor Moomoo today. The link works for users in both regions, both the United States and Australia. Check out the link below for more information.
Well, the White Dudes for Harris account on X was temporarily banned, they say, because they are so powerful. This group of white men, when was the last time a group of white men said they were so powerful? They're saying they're so powerful that that X is scared of them. Only their account was actually not banned. It is currently active. We went and checked it out today. Here is at Dudes for Harris. No, the account doesn't say white dudes. They added white dudes because they are specifically wanting white support here, which, again, I don't have a problem with. You know, there's blacks for Trump or Jews for Trump or what have you. You know, I think it's okay to coalesce, but it's also not okay to speak for other people. And that's exactly what this account purports to do. Now, the irony here is that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I understand that there's blacks and stuff for Trump and all that, but could you imagine if there was white dudes for Trump? Like, that would just get a completely different reaction.
Right.
Even though, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, even though we sort of assume that the average Trump archetype is a white dude who wears a trucker-like cap. Sure.
But if he launched a campaign like that, wow.
Himself. Right. And this is ordained through the Kamala Harris campaign. And they're saying, oh, my gosh, we were censored. The irony here is that Democrats love censorship unless they're being censored themselves. But they also know that crying about censorship often bolsters these accounts, or at least it does for Trump affiliated accounts. So now they're saying we're being censored because we're so powerful. So look over here. Here is the ban notice for the account that they showed off after a Zoom call that reportedly raised $4 million for Kamala Harris. What they're saying is that they were suspended for violating rules against evading censorship. And here's what the account owner says, that we scared Elon Musk and Donald Trump Jr. so much that they suspended our account. Now, when was Donald Trump Jr. doing censorship on X? What power does he have? I think they're maybe we're trying to tag Trump himself. Does that look like a mistake to you? Or do you guys know that Trump Jr. has some kind of power that we don't know about?
I mean,
why? Anyway,
I don't know. That's weird.
Anyway, yeah, they're saying
really typo. They have to do Donald
I think
Trump,
it's a typo. Yeah, because they're idiots. So they're saying these guys are running scared of the success we've had tonight, but we're not going to quit. The suspension notice, though, again, was for evading suspension rules, not for content. So no one's scared of this content. They say that they did then pressure Elon Musk and the account is back up. So now they're celebrating. They're saying we are so back because people were complaining to Elon Musk about white dudes for Harris for this community. And now it's been reinstated. Elon Musk hasn't at this hour clarified this at all. Now, of course, I'm not for censorship. I think they should have an X account and say what they want to say. It's worth hearing out anybody, right, who wants to speak for a contingency of voters. Let's have a conversation. Well, here's the conversation. This is the white dude call to arms that happened on Monday night. It is like a casting call for anybody who wants to keep working in Hollywood as a white male, including, here are some names. I'm going to name drop. Don't know these dudes, but they were in the Zoom call. Sean Astin, Josh Gad, Jeff Bridges, Josh Groban, Mark Ruffalo, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Mark Hamill, and some politicians such as Transportation Secretary
who's
Pete
the guy
Buttigieg.
At the bottom of the, who's the guy at the bottom of the screen there? He was like
Lance
a
Bass.
Lance Bass.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From
and the top one is
one
Adam
of the boy
ruins
bands.
Everything.
Okay.
On the upper left?
Guys, which boy
upper
band
right.
was Lance Bass? Is he NSYNC or New Kids on the Block? Or
I think he was,
NSYNC, I believe.
I think NSYNC, yeah.
Is he part of the Temptations? I don't know. Okay, well, you can see he was one of those. You can see that there's a hat also to go with it.
Oh, yeah. Did you order your hat, David?
It's
White
a
Dudes for Harris?
The,
I did.
Did you get yours? White Dudes for Harris hat? I'm gonna buy one of those
I made
and just
a mistake.
Walk around.
Mine said White Dudes for Redacted. So,
okay.
That's what I'm stuck with.
Yeah, we should create our own hat like that. White Dudes for Redacted.
Yeah. Maybe see what happens if you wear that into a Bass Pro. Don't go
right.
into the ammunition.
I'm gonna
center.
Wear one of the. I'm gonna wear a White Dudes for Harris hat and walk into Cabela's this afternoon.
Okay. Let's see what happens.
See if I and get a rifle.
All right. So don't you dare, though, get excited about being part of a group of white male voters unless you have practiced some self-flagellation first, because you have to first admit that being a white dude at all gives you privilege, full stop. Here is the call's instructions from organizer Ross Morales, saying, as white men, we recognize all too clearly the toxic of the culture of toxic entitlement surrounding Donald Trump. So we need to be honest with ourselves and each other about the role we've played in our nation's history, good and bad. Get it, white people? You need to take responsibility for this. Personally, we are creating a space of honesty and trust where we can support each other and work towards a brighter future. And also, there's a social media kit with pre-written posts that white dudes can use. So you can use their language as a white dude. So you can post things that don't seem like you think too much of yourself or you are telling other people how to behave. It's a, again, self-flagellating language that you can use that won't threaten other people. Because, again, we talked about this yesterday. The assumption is that people of color cannot take being challenged. They don't like it. They're not strong enough for it. You're the only one who can take. If you're white, you can take having your feelings hurt or having hurtful things said to you, but nobody else is as strong as you. That is, my friends, neo-racism. And again, you can come as long as you are fully willing to admit your white privilege. If you come to discuss that maybe your life is hard and you'd like the next elected president to help you out at all, you're going to get booted from the Zoom call, full stop. Here is one participant, Adam Conover, admitting that white men are discriminated against in Hollywood, but saying that's just fair now.
Well, something that I've heard a lot as a white man in Hollywood is that I didn't get such and such an opportunity because they couldn't hire a white man. That's something that you hear now quite often. And when I'm told that, I tell the person, first of all, who told me that to fuck off, because that's racist and it's a lie when they tell you that. It's designed to divide people. More importantly, the reason I tell them to fuck off is because I know that everybody else who is maybe being considered for that opportunity is the sort of person who just a little while ago would have not been considered for that opportunity because they were not a white man, except no one would have ever told them that to their face, right? Or they wouldn't even had a chance to go into the room and audition, or maybe they wouldn't even made it to Los Angeles, right? When people tell you that, they are expressing the fact that there's been a change in this country where, for once in the entire history of this country, white men don't get every single opportunity. And that's something that I'm proud of. I'm proud to be part of our industry and our country at a time when that's the case. And you know why that is? It's because I have something called solidarity, because I care about everybody else and everybody else's problems. And I stand up for their issues as much as my own.
Okay, so if you're a white man who's not had opportunities for jobs and you'd like your life to be a little bit easier, you'd like equal access to opportunities, you'd like not to be the victim of inflation that was created by political perversion, you can't say that because he laughed at you and said, oh, well, it's our turn for life to be hard. I guess that's just the way it is. I wonder, though, what gives him the right to speak on behalf of all white men and advocate for their hard knocks as a comeuppance? It's fair. I wonder if people like this are familiar with actually the data on poverty, showing that white poverty is also very serious and that in many counties it's just as bad as black poverty and just as historically rooted. This is from economist Thomas Sowell from his most recent book, Social Justice Fallacies. It's not a great screenshot, but you can take a screenshot and read it later because this is from a physical book. But if you really care about inequality, then you have to care about inequality for everybody. And you have to realize that white maleness actually does lead to poverty in certain zip codes. And you have to care about that too. People in hillbilly communities have even lower income than blacks overall. So this white male privilege bit is a bit ignorant, right? So these, yes, white male actors are privileged. They can acknowledge that in front of us, sure. But do they speak on behalf of all whites, people in these communities? And in fact, what Thomas Sowell here says that people in low-income American hillbilly counties already face zero racism because these people live in virtually all white communities. So it's not racism that's happening here. It's classism. It's that they don't have an opportunity. So there's nothing, and some of them even have lower incomes than blacks. So there's no white male privilege there. You can't speak on behalf of all people of your skin color. That is racist. Now, Pete Buttigieg spoke on behalf of men who have sex with women, even though he is not one of them. And he had this to say about abortion.
I'm so glad she has made freedom the theme of her campaign, because I think in so many ways that's what's at stake. And yes, women's freedom is exhibit A after Donald Trump demolished the right to choose. But of course, men are also more free in a country where we have a president who stands up for things like access to abortion care. Men are more free.
Oh, okay. I'm in.
That rings to me of rape culture. That makes me a little bit uncomfortable. You're free to, I don't know, impregnate women, I guess. That's how that comes off to me. I don't like it. He is free from unwanted pregnancy. As a gay man, maybe someone should have reminded him of that privilege. And, you know, again, should he be speaking on behalf of men who can impregnate women or women who can get pregnant? He did. Anyway, Brianna Morello on X from The Brianna Morello Show put together this snippet of the call for us to see. And then let's just watch this. It's a little over 2 minutes. It's sort of the general mood of what these white men think. Hollywood privileged elite white men think of Kamala Harris.
I'm white, I'm a dude, and I'm for Harris.
Over the last few years, you know, I've been thinking a lot about men.
I'm not sure if you guys can recall that feeling you had on the night of Tuesday, November 8th, 2016. I stood over my kid's bed and I wept.
White nationalists in MAGA, they want to speak for you. You specifically as white men.
In the marginalized communities that educate me every single day, that this is a constant education for all of us.
Kamala is carrying on her shoulders 248 years of pain, of agony, of hope, of frustration. And no matter how high she jumps, no matter how many degrees she has, no matter how good her grades are, she's never good enough because they're always moving the line.
What a variety of whiteness we have here. It's like a rainbow of beige.
But man, I am scared to death
from the West Wing
of what the future could look like if we go back to another Trump administration, one that truly left working construction white men behind.
You've seen it with congressional leaders who have called Vice President Harris a DEI candidate.
Of course, men are also more free in a country where we have a president who stands up for things like access to abortion.
Is this camera on the floor?
Let's be clear about who Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are. Donald Trump is a 34-time convicted felon, an adjudicated rapist, and a congenital liar. He's a fraud. And J.D. Vance is his mini-me. I even created my own cognitive test that describes the two of them. Sofa, dolphin, shark, cat, convict.
Real men respect women, their decisions, their careers. And it's pretty clear that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance don't.
A woman president, man. How exciting.
If there is a God, she's a terrible writer.
One day, we all will be asked what we did to stop this MAGA movement. What will your answer be?
Okay, so this is full of Trump hate, sure.
Oh, yeah, and the one guy said, we're talking about a guy who was an adjudicated rapist, meaning past tense.
You know who that guy is the Pritzker family, which pushes transgender drugs. So I love him talking about fakes and phonies.
Yeah, but adjudicated rapist, right? This is exactly why the judge now will allow Trump's lawsuit against ABC News and George Stephanopoulos to go forward,
yeah,
because he was not found
convicted of rape.
Not convicted of rape.
Yes.
So here he is saying that this has gone through. He's been adjudicated. It was adjudicated in a court of law, and he's been, you know, he's been found out to be a rapist.
Yeah.
Really? He's saying that on a Kamala call. That's right. Factually, you know, false.
And again, I want to hear what everybody has to say. I don't want to censor voices that I don't like. So we're listening to, yes, sure, a lot of Trump hate. Trump is odious. Trump hates women. Trump is convicted. Trump has these, you know, different problems. Okay. They also are, though, full of virtue signaling of supporting women, and specifically women of color, although the Biden campaign can't really decide what she is, or the Biden administration, rather. Here was Biden's introduction yesterday at a civil rights speech where the speaker just can't decide. You can tell that it's written in a strange way because we don't know how to promote her in order to garner the maximum amount of votes.
And to choose as his running mate, Kamala Harris, the first. The first black woman, Asian American to hold the vice president, but you already knew that.
What is she? Oh. Exactly. Whatever the voting machine wants her to be, whatever will write it down.
Yeah. She was South Asian a few years ago. She said it herself. Now she's black, though.
Sure. So are black voters buying it? Well, this panel on MSNBC is not.
How many of you know a black man who has expressed to you that they're committed to voting for Donald Trump? Okay. For the brothers who have told you that or said that to you, has the emergence of Kamala Harris changed that for those brothers?
No.
Okay, see, look at his... Why?
She's black.
She's our skin color. We are supposed to have a congruence of thought. We all are the same color, so we should think the same.
Right. When I see a white person, I automatically assume they think like me.
Why are you black guys not playing along? Don't you look in the mirror? Like the because US of what like, you see, you think this.
It's like the U.S.'s response to when another country has an election and we don't like the result. We're like, no, not like that. Like, screw your democracy. You didn't do it right. You got to come to the results that we won, or else you're doing it wrong. And that was kind of like the look he had.
Yeah. And again, this is neo-racism when you're telling people how to believe based on their skin color or what you think that they believe or what assumptions you make. That's racism. Here's what white male journalist Michael Schellenberger said about this. He says, he says that I don't like the idea that I'm responsible for all of these sins of my past. He says, I'm responsible for my actions, not all men of my race. The alternative idea that all white men alive are responsible for the bad or good deeds throughout history is totally irrational and racist. He says, but like the white women for Harris, black women for Harris, white dudes for Harris is racist and sexist and anathema to unifying Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream vision, which, is true. Martin Luther King advocated for a colorblind society. It seems like Democrats want the opposite of that. So let us know what you think of this message. Again, I don't want to poke fun here. I want to hear what every subset of thinkers has to say and then debate it on the issue. But again, I don't think that we should be making assumptions about what you should believe based on your skin color. So,
I'm just frustrated that society seems to, and all these social media networks and others, they focus on what people are rather than who. Nobody cares who people are anymore. It's like, what is the most important thing? We want your kids to know what they are, so we're going to teach them what they are in school. Because that's like the most important thing. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah. It's frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to know Josh Gad, who in that video clip was like, you know, I don't know how many of you remember on November 5th or whatever, 2016, when Donald Trump won. And I was crying that night and I stood over my child's bed and wept.
Yeah.
And I wept. I would love to ask him, like, what did you weep about? Like, what were you so upset about? And then what came true about that now? And you're literally so upset now that you're throwing your support behind Kamala Harris. It must be nice with his palm trees there in Malibu, wherever he is, you know, sitting there feeling uncomfortable.
I
about the United States in some way. I don't understand.
I think he left out context. I think he had just got denied for being Olaf again. And that's what he was really crying about, but he had something else to blame it on.
Well, and not to be pedantic, but he framed himself as just a giant floating head, so I could barely hear what he was saying. Because half of the people, if those were Hollywood elites, they should be able to frame their damn shot. It was so distracting to me.
And the dude was backlit. Like, don't you know that there's...
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that made us all upset last night. Seeing the dude last night. Yeah.
I just imagine, you know how you used to lay on your bed with your feet crossed and up and be on the telephone? Like, he was sitting there, like, with his phone on the bed, laying there.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm just here
wearing
for Kamala.
Wearing a suit from, like, the waist up.
Yeah.
Let us know your thoughts on all of this. Hey, we got to mention our newsletter. We have a daily newsletter I would love for all of you to check out. I haven't mentioned it in a few weeks, and you got to subscribe. It's the coolest, best newsletter in the world. Google has labeled it as dangerous. So when you sign up, it might go into a dangerous folder. You might get put as a dangerous label. Let us know when you sign up. Just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and you will receive a welcome email from me, which is just my email, clayton@redacted.inc. And then you need to move it over to your inbox, because tomorrow morning when we publish the newsletter on Wednesday morning, it should come to your inbox unless Google has like labeled it dangerously or something. So maybe it's time everyone should get a Proton email account or something. But anyway, go to redacted.inc, sign up for the newsletter. We cover about four or five of the bad, you know, big stories of the morning that the mainstream media largely ignores, or we try to cut through the propaganda and the spin on it. It's a perfect way to start your day. Redacted.inc. All right.
Thanks for joining us every day that you can. Day. Thank you for doing that. We're live Monday through Thursday, and we have content through the weekend. So we'll see you here tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
Have a great night.